Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
Welcome back. Welcome back. Welcome back.
They're back. It's the Boss.
And the Gloss.
We're back.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
Live from the Sports Map Radio Studios, here's David Gow.
And Carla Dawson.
Welcome in, everybody. I am David Gow, the Boss, and next to me, Carla Dawson, the Gloss. We got Sean Mapes behind the glass. Great to be here with both of you.
Yes, happy Monday, David. Happy Monday, Sean.
Love spending my Mondays with y'all.
Love doing Mondays, and I love a Monday night that has a doubleheader football game. I mean,
how
we've got
about that?
Two tonight. Isn't that fantastic?
New Orleans at Carolina, and then Browns at Pittsburgh.
Yes, which game are you looking forward to the most?
Well, I love me some Derek Carr. So I'm ready to see the Saints.
Of course, yes. You being a longstanding Raiders fan, Derek Carr, one of the best quarterbacks they've had in a long time, now suiting up for the Saints. Do you have mixed feelings seeing him in another uniform?
You know, not for him, no. But my mixed feelings, which we'll get to later in the program, just comes from being a cradle Raider fan, and yet I'm so frustrated with the head coach, Josh McDaniels, that it's hard for me to root for them. And that is really pulling me apart. I got a dichotomy going. I got to somehow work it out. I might need some therapy. I don't know.
Well, I know you need therapy, but that's another topic.
That's a whole other topic.
But
yes.
The Saints, they surprised me a little bit. I mean, I always have been high on Derek Carr. You know, I think he's an excellent quarterback. But it's funny, they had fallen off my radar in the days of Jameis Winston and all the other things they were doing and the departure of Sean Payton a couple years ago.
It's been messy.
But they've got a shot in their division. I mean, Tampa Bay is off to 2-0 start, and that division
not going to last.
No, and in that division is not very good. But there it is. I mean, Tampa Bay's there. The Saints are going to be in the mix, but I don't think it's strong. So I think the Saints have certainly are in the consideration to win that division.
Well, and you know, in Derek Carr's time with, I can't even say Oakland, with the Raiders, Oakland and Las Vegas, he had seven different head coaches, five different offensive coordinators. I mean, he had a messy situation, but Dennis Allen, head coach of the Saints, was one of his offensive coordinators. So perhaps there is a little familiarity there, and we'll see how it goes. He's a fantastic leader. We do know that. If we remember what he did with Las Vegas when they lost John Gruden, they lost Henry Ruggs. There was so much going on, and he held that locker room together. So I think he's the leader that the Saints need, and he and Dennis Allen hopefully already have enough familiarity that they can just pick up and roll.
So on the other side, there's another leader for the Panthers now, Bryce Young, the number one pick overall, the standout quarterback from Alabama. What are you looking for from him at this point?
For him to be able to stay on his feet. I mean, he's so smart. He's so talented. He does not have a lot of pieces around him. It's a new coach. I'm hoping that he's able to see the field, read the defenses, and to be able to put up respectable numbers. When you look at C.J. Stroud, also rookie quarterback with the Houston Texans, the O-line, injury woes, I mean, he got sacked, I don't know how many times yesterday, a lot. But his numbers, personally, were really good, and he competed until the end, even when it wasn't a game. And so I hope the same for Bryce Young. I hope that he can personally put up good numbers if he doesn't have the staff around him to be able to lead them to a win tonight. It's key that he starts feeling comfortable in that offense and can trust his pieces.
You know, next hour, we're going to get a chance to visit with Super Bowl champion Joe Theismann. And I wanted to ask him about the right way to develop these quarterbacks, because we are living in a world now where they're all getting thrust out on the field very, very quickly. All three of those guys taken at the top are playing now. Now, in yesterday's game, it was the Texans versus the Colts, and it was fun to see the matchup there of C.J. Stroud, and then you had Richardson over there for the Colts. Now, he, of course, got the concussion, had to leave the game early, but I happened to be at that game. It was down here in Houston, and I got to see them both firsthand.
You were in a fancy box, too, I might add.
I was sitting in a lovely suite, eating too much, but having a good view, bird's-eye view of the field. I thought C.J. Stroud did look sharp, for a rookie, and for a quarterback who had a lot of pressure. The Texans' offensive line did not play well yesterday. They're banged up. They've got some injuries. It's really too bad because the Texans, I mean, there were whispers. Where I was sitting, people were reminded when the Texans had taken David Carr, number one overall, but the offensive line of the Texans was so poor that Carr got so beat up and it basically unraveled his career.
It was the end.
It was the end. And it became a word here in Houston that he was David Card.
Exactly.
It was a phenomenon. And this is, of course, what the Texans have to – they cannot allow history to repeat itself here with C.J. Stroud. And yesterday, Stroud was running for his life in some of those games. The difference, though, is that the Texans have invested a lot of draft capital in that offensive line. Now, they've been beat up, but if they can get healthy, you'd like to think the Texans can form a wall to protect C.J. and give him the time he needs.
Well, I think you just said it right. The O-line is beset with injuries in Houston. But, you know, yesterday there you had to really look. If you got past the offensive woes, you really saw glimmers of hope in H-Town here. I mean, if you had to ignore the 6 sacks, the 8 tackles for a loss, the penalties, the stuffed runs, all because of an injured O-line. And if you look at CJ's numbers, he was 30 of 47, 65% completion, 384 yards, 2 touchdowns, 0 interceptions. He had a 103.5 QBR. That is a fantastic day. And that is with virtually no help from your O-line.
Yeah, no help. And
it's not a win. But, you know, in Houston, we've been in the basement that we've just got, that we've got to find positives. And there's a lot to look at for positives.
There are, and one positive was seeing John Metchie play yesterday.
Oh,
he's, of course, come back from leukemia, and he was taken, I guess, in the second round by the Texans a few years ago.
Out of Alabama.
And they wanted him to play last year, of course.
It would have been his rookie year last year.
It would have been a rookie. He had to sit out due to health issues, and to see him back out there, he had a catch yesterday. He was a really great sight for the Texans to see out on that field.
And, I mean, it's not even just health issues. I mean, leukemia. But, you know, look how things work out so beautifully. He got drafted by the Houston Texans. Where they play at NRG is 5 minutes tops from the best cancer hospital, arguably the best cancer hospital in the United States, in MD Anderson. And so, you know, what a great story for that. He didn't even know if he'd be able to play again. He's back on there, had a 17-yard beautiful catch yesterday. I mean, what a story. So there, and I love D'Amico Ryans. I mean, I love me some D'Amico Ryans. He's a great guy to lead. Their defense needs a lot of help. He's a defensive guy. We love what he did in San Francisco. So hopefully, you know, Rome is not built in a day. It's not going to be prime time like it is in Boulder here in Houston. But you know what? I like the start. Believe it or not.
I was disappointed in the Texans' defense yesterday. That is D'Amico Ryan's specialty. There's been a lot of talk that they have more talent on the defensive side of the ball, that they would be effective at slowing down the Colts and certainly a rookie quarterback. Now, of course, Richardson left the game, but Gardner Minshew pretty much had his way with the Texans' defense.
Well, I think Gardner Minshew, actually, obviously, he has a lot more NFL experience than Richardson. And yep. Frankly, a lot more college experience, even though he came from Washington State in the Pac-12, and no one really talks about Washington State. He played a long career there, where Richardson was in a platoon system in Florida with other quarterbacks and didn't really have many starts. He's freakishly athletic, but you know, has had 2 different coaches, and Dan Mullins and then Billy Napier. So he really, you know, he really hasn't had a lot of snaps. So I think I think what was notable is that, I can't really run around like that and not expect to be hit. But, yeah, I mean, he could get away with that in college, but NFL defenses are big, they're fast, they're strong, and I think, sadly, He learned that the hard way yesterday.
Well, given his ability to run, and he is an athletic freak, mm-hmm. and his relative immaturity as a passer, I can see why they're running him. But they need him to be healthy. And he's taken some tough hits over the last couple of weeks. And that's just not sustainable. So they're going to have to figure something out there. Back to your point about Gardner Minshew. Yes, at this point in his career, Gardner Minshew is a better quarterback than Anthony Richardson.
He was the starter in Jacksonville.
Just is. I mean, yep. Minshew's had some stretches where he's played pretty good ball. For some reason, in my head, he feels like Ryan Fitzpatrick, a guy who can step in for a few games and play at a very elite level, and then for some reason it just tails off.
It's the stash. I know it's the stash.
Well,
that's what's getting you.
You know, the whole stash thing, I mean, you were the one who explained this to me. I was unaware. I don't know where you saw these videos, but he's famous, you know, Gardner is, for dancing around in the locker room with nothing on but a jock strap and his mustache.
That was in Jacksonville.
Yeah. And it was in
Stranger Things.
You remember it well, right?
I do.
Like a bad dream, perhaps?
I will take the fifth.
Okay, we've got just a couple more minutes this segment, but I wanted to ask you, you know, now we're looking at some teams, several teams that I thought were going to be pretty strong teams, teams to make the playoffs, who have started 0-2. And it's curious to me, what's happened to these guys and which one, if any of them, will make the playoffs. But the three that jump out at me are the Bengals, of course, because they've been so good since the arrival of Joe Burrow. The Chargers, who, when I look at Justin Herbert, I just am blown away by his arm talent. The guy can throw the ball anywhere, anyhow.
Unreal.
He's unreal. He's exceptional. And then the Patriots, 0-2, and they've had two close losses. But I want to ask you, of those three teams, all 0-2, all off to bad starts, are any of them going to make the playoffs? And if so, which one?
I don't think Cincinnati's going to make the playoffs.
Yeah, because of Burrow's injury, right?
Yes, because remember, he got injured first day of preseason camp. You know, and to me, and it was a calf injury, and he missed the entire camp. And, you know, obviously he came back. It was hard to tell in week one because it was that rainy game in Cleveland where everyone was struggling. But I have to believe he's not 100%. You can definitely tell that. He doesn't have a great O-line at all either. I don't think that as the NFL season progresses, your injury is going to get better. This is week-to-week car wrecks. So I'm worried about Joe Burrow. He's not starting out 100%, and I don't think you can get there during an NFL season.
All right, we'll give you a chance to come back to the other teams when we return. The Chargers and the Patriots, also 0-2. Do they have a shot at the playoffs? It'll be fun to see that up next here on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Boss
and the Gloss
on the Sports Map Radio Network. From the Sports Map Radio Studios,
here's David Gao and Carla Dawson.
Welcome back, Sports Map Radio. And when we went to break, we were talking about some 0-2 teams, teams that have started out 0-2, whom we thought were going to be in the playoffs, but are now very much at risk. The Bengals are the headlines of that because the Bengals, of course, Joe Burrow's health has been a problem, and without Joe Burrow, that team goes nowhere. Joe Burrow is so core to everything the Bengals do. He's got those three great receivers that he spreads out, but he injured himself in preseason, struggled. Now, he left the game the other day, re-injuring that calf, and if he's not going to be able to play for a couple weeks or they're forced to sit him out, it's going to be hard to dig out of an 0-2 hole.
Well, because with a not full force Joe Burrow, in the first two games, Cincinnati has 13 punts and two offensive touchdowns.
Yes, so they've struggled with him.
13 punts.
Right.
Come on. And in the last 2 years, Burrow's been hit, are you ready for this? 240 times.
Yeah.
He's been more than David Card.
That's a really alarming stat. And it's so interesting because the Bengals have tried to address it. They've drafted offensive linemen early. They did the big free agent signing. You remember they signed Lionel Collins from the Cowboys to play right tackle. And Collins did not perform for them, and he's just been cut. So they were very disappointed at a free agent bust for that offensive line of the Bengals. No, I think their team, 0-2, it's in real trouble. and likely to miss the playoffs. Let me go to the Chargers, though. They, too, start 0-2, but they've got Justin Herbert, who's just an amazing talent. They've lost to the Dolphins in week one.
In a close one.
In a very close one, a shootout with Tua, which was fun to watch. And then, of course, they lost yesterday.
In overtime, another close one.
So this is a team, and they two close losses, a lot of talent on the field. They can bounce back, can they not?
No.
No.
No, and you know what? I say that so emphatically. I love Justin Herbert. I love how he has developed. I love what he's doing. But when you have Brandon Staley as your head coach, his seat should be on fire. I thought he should have been gone 2 years ago.
Yep, I remember you were saying that on this airwave. You said it.
And I could not believe they brought him back. And Brandon Staley, and this was in 2021, when they lost that playoff game to the Las Vegas Raiders, who were being coached by special teams coach Rick Bisaccia,
yeah.
After that whole crazy season of John Gruden getting fired, all that terrible publicity, Henry Ruggs killing a woman and her dog in a car wreck for drunk driving. I mean, they had a horrific season. And that was the craziest game that went into overtime. And Justin Herbert was brilliant. 4th and 17, done. 4th and 15, done. He was doing everything. And then Brandon Staley made some bonehead calls.
Yeah, right.
And Rick Bisaccia said, well, I was about to share this with you so we could both go to the playoffs, but not now. And after that game, I remember Brandon Staley calling out his coordinators, and he was going to move things around in the coaching ranks with the Chargers. And I thought, look in the mirror. This is you. You're the head honcho. You're the one calling those ridiculous plays. I do not think he is the man for the job. Hmm. And I think he's really going to harm. Justin Herbert's not going to be able to go anywhere with his career. And you look against two very good teams in Tennessee and Miami. They were very close games, despite some bonehead moves by the Chargers. The fact that Ryan Tannehill looked like he was Tom Brady. There's the first issue. I mean, my gosh.
Yeah, there's something amiss in that Chargers defense. It's really troubling. I mean, a week ago, we saw Tyreek Hill go deep against Derwin James, and Derwin James supposedly their best defensive back, and yet he couldn't keep up with Tyreek. But the scheme there should have been a double team, and clearly there aren't going to be many teams that are going to try to match up one-on-one with Tyreek Hill.
No, and in yesterday's game versus Tennessee, the Chargers were 2-14 on third downs. 2-14. Titans were 6-13.
Yep.
I mean, you can't do that on those money downs. You can't do that in the National Football League and expect to be anywhere. And they're in a kind of a tough division, not really. I take that back. But I don't have a lot of confidence as long as Brandon Staley is in charge. He has not shown me anything that gives me faith.
Okay. How much faith do you have in the Patriots after starting 0-2? A little bit better coach over there in New England, but this is a coach who is not had a great record since the departure of Tom Brady.
No, but I thought, you know, week one, lost a close one.
Very close.
And the Eagles should have been running over the Patriots. So for me, I felt like the end of that game in week one, the Eagles should be looking in the mirror and saying, rut-row. But they've got two brand new coordinators since both departed after going to the Super Bowl.
But you raise a good point. The Patriots committed two turnovers early in that game, got in a hole.
A big hole.
But after that, they actually outplayed the Eagles,
yes.
Outgained them in total yards. They played a better game, almost beat the Eagles at the end. Now, yesterday, of course, they had the disappointing loss on Sunday Night Football, and they had their chance late as well against the Dolphins, who are looking like a very, very good team right now. And the Patriots almost pulled it off. I mean, it was a fun matchup, Mac Jones versus Tua.
Well, you know, I think I don't agree with the late call where the tight end for the Patriots pitched it to the lineman.
To Strange.
Yes, to Strange. He basically got the first down. There was no – I watched it from every angle, and I thought, that's the call in the field. It has to be indisputable evidence to be overturned, and I thought that was a really poor decision I didn't see it. I didn't see indisputable evidence.
Well, two close calls back-to-back certainly weighed into the Patriots' losses the week prior. The catch that was not a catch along the sideline. It really wasn't.
Yeah.
But to your point yesterday, since the call on Strange's run, by the way, give the guy some credit.
Oh my gosh.
He put his shoulder down and started churning his legs. He looked like a fullback to me. He was beautiful in the way he ran the ball.
I thought it was great.
But it did look to me like he got that first. I can look, and that was the call in the field. I saw some angles that maybe it looked like he didn't, maybe it didn't, but it was inconclusive. It was inconclusive enough to me that the call on the field was going to stand.
Exactly.
And, of course, at that point, I was rooting for that outcome because I was so eager to see, wow, what's going to happen down the stretch here? The Patriots actually might have pulled that off if, in fact, Strange had been awarded the first down.
I think that's right. And, you know, what I did see with the Patriots that is concerning to me is they're very risk-averse. There was no pass over 13 yards from Mac Jones yesterday. It's the first time they're 0-2 since 2011. Remember who their new offensive coordinator is.
Tell me. The great Bill O'Brien?
We are broadcasting here in Houston, so that is what we know him all too well here. And frankly, it's a boring offense. It really is. Now, and I'd love, you know, every once in a while I'd like to see some sort of explosive play. I didn't see anything that was explosive. But so I loved what was happening at the end there where the tight end flipped it to Strange. And I thought, now we're talking.
Whatever Bill O'Brien didn't call, he didn't call a little pitch and catch play.
No, he didn't do the hook and ladder.
Or whatever it is. I will say, though, the interesting thing, and to watching that game, is just to compare the skill positions and the total athleticism between those two teams. I mean, those wide receivers, Waddle and Hill for the Dolphins, have speed to burn. And then
they're like Formula One.
Yes, the Formula One. And then you look on the other side of the ball, and the Patriots are a plodding offense, and you just feel that. And so it's a real struggle. In fact, when we look at those two quarterbacks, Mac and Tua, of course, they both came out of the same program.
They have
time under Steve Sarkisian, who trained them both at different windows under time at Alabama, believe it or not. And when I look at the two, the biggest difference to me are those weapons, those Dolphins. The Dolphins have really equipped Tua for success. And I look around what Mac Jones has, and it just doesn't look very exciting or very dynamic.
Well, and it seems like, too, what I really noticed in Tua's game yesterday, because I really watched that closely, and I know he's done a lot of work. You know, he had that terrible situation with all the consecutive concussions last year that took him out for a long time. But what he's done is taken something that was really devastating and really could have ended his NFL career and learned from it. And so did Coach Mike McDaniel, who I credit for a lot of what is happening here, meaning that, you know, Tua has done things like take jiu-jitsu so that he can learn how to fall better and protect his head. What I really noticed yesterday, his release is so quick. And I credit Mike McDaniel for that because I have not noticed that before. And he gets the ball out. It's not quite Tom Brady quick because he was the master at quick release. But it's the same with Aaron Rodgers. Yes, get it out quickly because you do have the weapons and you do have the personnel that can do it. And I was really impressed with that with Tua yesterday. I thought that was great.
Yeah, it's interesting to compare because with Brady, it felt like he did a lot of pre-snap reads and then he would get back and quickly process where to go with the ball. With Tua, I think Mike McDaniels has him set up that he just takes these quick steps back and then he looks for his guy and he throws it or he goes to another spot or that's it. I mean, it's very, very fast. And those receivers get down the field so quickly that he didn't have to wait long for them to get down the field. I mean, just that these are nuances, but the game comes down to nuances. The timing to throw is sort of between 2 or 3 seconds.
Yeah, exactly.
And so if you have a receiver who can get down the field 15 yards faster than somebody can get down the field 15 yards, that's a really great thing. You can tap into that speed.
I think Brady's release is like 1.7 seconds.
Unbelievable.
Something crazy. Yeah,
all right, when we come back, we're going to hear from Gary Myers. He's going to join us. He has been covering the NFL since 1978. He's written 6 books, and we're going to ask him about his latest, Once a Giant, that up here on the Sports Map Radio Network.
This is The Boss
and the Gloss
on the Sports Map Radio Network.
From the Sports Map Radio Studios, here's David Gao
and Carla Dawson.
Welcome back. I'm David Gao, and Joining us now on the Progressive Insurance guest line is Gary Myers, who has covered the NFL since 1978. He's the noted author of 6 books, including the New York Times bestseller Brady versus Manning. He's a Hall of Fame voter, and he's got a new book out called Once a Giant, a story of victory, tragedy, and life after football. And it's all about the 1986 Giants. Gary, great to have you on with us. You're on with David and Carla.
Hi, how you guys doing? Thanks for having me on.
Well, we are doing great. And boy, this book you've just come out with is, it looks like there's some amazing nuggets in here about a great era with the Giants. Obviously, great success on the field. You had Parcells as head coach, Belichick as an assistant. Tell us why you chose to write this book at this time.
Yeah, it wasn't necessarily because I felt like I needed to revisit the 86 Giants, you know, which is, to me, one of the 3 best teams of the Super Bowl era. I felt the need to write about life after football and mm-hmm. what's happened to these players, because I think life after football is, you know, one of the most important topics or issues that, you know, players from today, yesterday, tomorrow, they all have to be concerned about. So whereas I didn't do a game-by-game recap of the 86 season, because that was done so many times in the years after the championship, I went back and talked about and wrote about how this team became a brotherhood with an unbreakable bond that was formed by winning a championship together. And now 37 years later, they're still a very tight-knit team that takes care of each other as they're growing old together. And they're facing a lot of the challenges of life after football that all players from that era are facing. Certainly some of them are unique to them, but I think it really shines a light on the damage that playing a collision sport for many years can cause to them, both, you know, mentally, physically, and in some cases financially.
Gary, you know, you talked about the brotherhood that was going on with this 1986 Giants, especially, you know, with players like Phil Simms, Lawrence Taylor, Mark Bavaro, Harry Carson. You know, amongst a brotherhood and a family, it sounds all sunshine and roses, but the reality is that as families, you stick together through the worst of times and the very best of times. And as the public, you know, we just see the wins and losses, the heartbreak and elation. How dark really is life after football? And is this just for a select few of these players, or is this a vast majority? And would these players say it was worth it?
Yeah, that's a great question. I asked a lot of them, would they do it over again? And kind of got mixed results, mixed mm-hmm. answers, because some of them, knowing what they know now, they wouldn't have played. Certainly it was the highlight of their professional lives, achieving the ultimate in the NFL and winning a championship together. But those who have had a double-digit number of surgeries and have been going through mental health issues, it's not an isolated case. I don't think any of these players, except maybe for the kickers and the punters, have a career in the NFL and come out of it unscathed. Mm-hmm. There's always something, you know, whether it's a hip, shoulder, or knee replacement, or like I said, some of these mental health issues where they're having some memory loss, and a lot of them now are concerned about CTE because of all the new information about that that's come out over the last decade. So, again, where I wrote this about the 86 Giants, you know, whereas I did it about the 86 Giants, it really could have been about any team, because all right. the players from that era are experiencing some sort of challenge caused by playing football. And, you know, I wanted to just write about one team rather than, say, cherry-picking players from around the league, because this way I was able to bring the story together, and especially because this team is unique in a way that they do care for each other, you know, so many years later. There's so many great examples in the book of at how they rallied around players, their teammates, who were in need of support.
Well, you know what really struck me in the book, Gary, which I really love that you brought this up and I had no idea, is with Bill Parcells. I mean, obviously he has a very unique coaching style, you know, from working his players to kind of bullying them, but yet on the other end supports them emotionally. And now we learn from your book financially as well. And you reveal that he's given about $4 million over time to 20 players with no expectation of being paid back at all. Talk about this generous heart and this side of Bill Parcells.
Yeah, I think, Cole, this is a side that, I mean, I didn't even know until I sat down and talked with him, and I know Bill really well. He had what I would term as a love-hate relationship with his players because he did work them so hard. Remember, that was the era where 2 days in training camp were the norm. And he would work them hard in pads twice a day, you know, four times a week or maybe five times a week. And, you know, during the season, it's very rare now that coaches put their players in pads. And Bill was doing it a couple of times a week. So you really had to buy into his program to play for him. And he understands the sacrifices these guys have made and the benefit it had to him and to them also, because they won the title together. But, you know, from his own perspective, that they helped him win two championships and become a Hall of Fame coach and helped make him a very wealthy man. So now at this point in his life, and he just turned 82 last month, you know, he set aside the money that he feels he needs to live the rest of his life, and he's put aside money for his adult daughters, and whatever is left, he is designated as a fund, so to speak, to help his former players. And he knows they don't come to him unless they're desperate, because it is kind of embarrassing to go to your former coach and say, you know, can you write me a check because I can't make my mortgage payment, or I have these medical bills that aren't covered by insurance, and I really need to get the balance back to zero. Can you help me? And he's obviously saddened that they have to come to him, but he's happy to help them. And I think, and I put this right in the introduction of the book, to kind of set the tone of the brotherhood. And I think it's really eye-opening for people to read that right off the bat.
We're talking to Gary Myers. He's got a new book, Once a Giant, A Story of Victory, Tragedy, and Life After Football. So, Gary, one of the things you've chronicled are the physical and the mental health issues of these former players. I guess I have to ask, what should be done now? I mean, you identified a problem that, as you've noted, is widespread. Is there more the NFL can do to preempt some of these post-football issues for players?
You know, just inherently, it's a very dangerous sport. They've done a lot of things, as we all know, to try to make it safer.
Yeah.
Whether it's with the equipment or the rule changes, with penalties during the game, or just making contact, you know, that the practices and pads rather during training camp and during the regular season by really cutting back on that. But other than putting quarterbacks in red jerseys or attaching flags to the hips of the players and making this flag football, I really don't know what else that can be done. I mean, they've improved the helmets and all kind of new equipment where they measure, you know, the players, how fast they're running, how much they run during a game. They've improved nutrition and all that kind of stuff, but when you get right down to it and you strip all that stuff away, you still have players who are bigger, stronger, and faster than at any time ever.
Yep.
You know, running into each other with the force of auto collisions, you know, car accidents, and happening several times during a game. So I think where the NFL needs to improve is to continue the education of the players about making sure they report if the trainers or these independent neurologists don't notice the symptoms of a concussion. I think these players have to self-report. And Anthony Richardson of the Colts did that yesterday, which for a rookie is a terrific thing that he did. But, you know, first and foremost, I really think they need to improve the medical benefits available to these players. It used to be from these players.
We couldn't agree more, but we got to take a break. Gary, thank you so much.
It's the Boss
and the Gloss
on the Sports Map Radio Network. From the Sports Map Radio Studios,
here's David Gao and Carla Dawson.
Welcome back, Sports Map Radio. Great to talk to Gary Myers last segment. Hated to cut him off there, but it is so interesting hearing about that 86 Giants team and the struggles those players have had. And I thought you asked the right question. So interesting that Bill Parcells, who is seemingly so rough around the edges, so gruff, a hard-nosed guy, actually underneath has a tender heart and has been very, very generous with his former players who have been in need, and Parcells has lent them $4 million with no expectation of that money coming back.
To over 20 players. I mean, that's really incredible. Because there was in reading, I've read parts of the book, and I'm not through with it yet, but like some of them, wide receiver Bobby Johnson, I mean, he was homeless for a while. Mm. And, I mean, he really got, you know, it was smoking crack, all kinds of things just got him on the skids, and Parcells helped him out. So I love the fact that as tough as he was, I mean, obviously we know that, you know, good things come out of suffering. They were all in the trenches together. That Parcells, in Parcells' system, he's paying it forward.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's really admirable and really cool. What we didn't get to ask Gary, which maybe you know the answer, David. So, you know, it was very public rift between he and Bill Belichick because they coached together. And then when Belichick left the Jets when they were there together, that wasn't nice. But I think they've kissed and made up. Is all good? Do you know?
Well, watching that, there was a great 30 for 30.
Yeah, that was awesome.
The two Bills. And it did seem like whatever had happened in the past, they were beyond it now. And look, football and the competitive rivalries are intense, and those two were intense people.
Yeah.
And so I can easily see why they might have had a problem. But it sure looked now they were – and the 30 for 30, it looked like they really appreciated what they had been able to do together and how they had both been good for each other. Because Belichick was great for Parcells as his defensive coordinator, and Parcells really was a little bit of a – older coach to Belichick, and if Belichick had a short list of mentors to him, it would have been Bill Parcells. They were very symbiotic, very similar, I think, in terms of coaching style, defensive-focused coaches, but they were better together than they ever were apart.
Good. I love that little synopsis.
So, the Cowboys were pretty good yesterday.
Oh, I knew you were going to come in good. So happy today. When the Cowboys win, I know we're going to have a good show.
It's
you're
a
gonna be happy.
Positive day for the Cowboys
That's
fans. 2-0. Defeating the Jets, I looked at that game as a trap game because with Rodgers getting injured as he did and Zach Wilson, the starting quarterback for the Jets, and everybody riding off the Jets, it just felt like, oh my goodness, the Cowboys could be vulnerable to taking the Jets and thinking they're not going to be competitive, taking them too easily, right? Just envisioning an easy walk-off win.
Well, especially after you blanked the Giants the week before.
Yep, back-to-back games against New York
Cowboys
teams.
Fan. Yeah.
Cowboys, so they got off to a good start, and on both sides of the ball, I mean, right now, it's easy to talk about their defense because they are showing that they are deep at all three levels of that defense. The depth of the defensive line is over the top strong. I mean, really, right now, there's a second-year player, Sam Williams, a standout defensive end with an extraordinary athletic ability, and he's hardly seeing the field because there have been so many good players ahead of them, and the Cowboys aren't letting offenses stay on the field for long. So anyway, just I can't say enough about that Cowboys defense and the way that Micah Parsons has impacted the game. It's really been a really exciting season to watch thus far.
Well, and it's very clear that the Big D is owning the Big Apple.
Yeah.
I mean, seriously, between the Giants and the Jets back-to-back, you all have taken care of business. What I've noticed this week, more than last week, and you're the expert Cowboys fan, so I'd love to get your take on this, It's what really struck me, and what I think is giving Dak a lot of success. Gotta credit Mike McCarthy. That guy gets a play out to his people so dang fast. I mean, it's out there, lined up, they go. I mean, it is the fastest. I don't remember seeing that last year. And obviously it was a different OC last year in Kellen Moore. But this was, I couldn't believe how fast the game was moving. And it really caught the Jets defense, which is a very good defense, on their heels.
It creates lots of flexibility. I think it really works well for Dak, because it gives him more time if he wants it at the line of scrimmage, or they just execute the play faster. It really works well. The second thing Mike McCarthy has done, it's a little different than Kellen Moore, is when he gets a lead, he's not out to light up the scoreboard, as right. He said. He's out to make sure that they come home with a win. And so you could see the play calling becomes very conservative. It has the last 2 weeks, because they've gotten good leads, and they're not trying to throw the ball 20 yards downfield, which exposes Dak. And then thirdly, they are making sure that Dak gets the ball out of his hands really, really quickly. I mean, it's a lot of three-step drops and throw a short hitch.
It's working.
And the ability to hit the slants has really been exceptional. It's working, and it's easier to run an offense, of course, when you're ahead, when the defense is giving you big leads. At some point, probably pretty soon, maybe not next week against the Cardinals, but at some point pretty soon,
they're going to be challenged.
They're going to need Dak Prescott to really step up and throw the ball downfield more regularly. But they haven't yet, and they've had that luxury. And Mike McCarthy's play calling has been perfect for Dak Prescott thus far.
It really has. I have to say, really, I'm very impressed with that. And I think that's a big change from last year.
One thing on the other side of the ball was...
Oh, boy.
Yeah, well, Robert Saleh and Nathaniel Hackett caught a lot of grief for not trying to run the ball more, for not protecting Zach Wilson more, for allowing him to be exposed.
Is the lead rusher, there's a problem.
Yeah, and when you look at the talent they've got in Hall and Cooks, you've got great running backs. And you saw, I mean, Breece Hall came out with his four emojis, which represented the fact that...
That was interesting.
He only got to run the ball four times. And when you look back at the game, you just look at the stats, that's the biggest head-scratcher. How could they not have tried to run the ball more? And I understand...
Why would you keep the another way to ask that is, why would you keep the ball in Zach Wilson's hand that long? I mean, Zach Wilson, you know what his QBR is overall so far in his NFL career?
I'd hate to even know. I mean, it has to be miserably low.
35.
Okay, 35. There it is.
He won three games his first year. Last year was benched halfway through the season. This is obviously was not expected in year three for him to start. So why in the world would he be your lead rusher? I don't understand. I feel like, wow, Robert Saleh, I really like you. I really got attached to you during Hard Knocks, and I loved him as a DC in San Francisco. But I don't know. I don't feel like Hackett and Saleh did their best job in scheme, given Zach Wilson's, I'm not even going to say talent. I don't know what it is.
Lack of skill talent. Set. Yes, lack you of talent. Cannot allow the game to rest on his shoulders. And they... Put
especially
too much
with
on
the
him.
Talent that's around him.
Really surprising.
Garrett Wilson, Breece Hall, Dalvin Cook. I mean, come on.
They took heat on their defensive side, too, because Sauce Gardner did not travel with CeeDee Lamb, and CeeDee Lamb lit him up. It was as simple as Mike McCarthy chose to line up CeeDee Lamb on the other side of the ball, opposite of Sauce Gardner, so that the best corner wouldn't stop the best wide receiver. And CeeDee Lamb was prolific yesterday, a great stat line. And so those are... coaching questions that I think Saleh and Hackett are going to have to solve this week.
Definitely. And then, you know, there's Mike McCarthy, who's had years and years of head coaching experience. So maybe that's the difference in it. I don't know. But it seems like they're going to stick with Zach Wilson. So if that's the case, they've got to figure out, they've got to use those running backs more. And where was Garrett Wilson? There wasn't that many targets to him either.
No, it was hard. I mean, of course, it's now Zach Wilson throwing to Garrett Wilson, and so you don't have as good a quarterback to do it. And then Zach Wilson was running for his life for a lot of the time. But the one chance they got, and Garrett Wilson caught it in stride, he ran for the touchdown, and that was the Jets' only score offensively.
No, he's uber-talented. Figure out a way to use him more.
No, great wide receiver there, great running backs. Man, you just got to get the ball out of Zach Wilson's hands somehow. So disappointing day for the Jets. It's sort of interesting. I'm sure you've heard the calls for the Jets to try to trade for Kirk Cousins.
Yes.
The Vikings have adjusted Cousins' contract so that this is his final year where the Vikings really have to pay him. Could they figure out a way to keep him next year? Sure. But no, this is presumably Kirk Cousins' final year with the Vikings. And if the Vikings fall out of the race here, there is a thought that they could make a trade to the Jets. But it's interesting because you've got Aaron Rodgers out there talking about how he's going to do the miraculous, which is come back from his Achilles surgery before the season ends or at the playoffs. But, of course, right now, based on their trajectory and the play of Zach Wilson, they're not going to be in the playoffs. Yeah. There'll be nothing to come back for. But if you could trade for Kirk Cousins, I mean, it would be an extraordinary luxury to give up a lot to go get Kirk Cousins to keep them in the race to wait for Aaron Rodgers. I just can't imagine all those things unfolding. I would almost assume that if you trade for Kirk Cousins, you're banking on Kirk Cousins as your quarterback for the whole year. I just don't think you can count on Rodgers coming back, despite the bold talk.
No, I agree. And you know what? Rodgers likes to be in the headlines. So if he says he's out for the year, then we might not be talking about him. But this way, it keeps us waiting and watching and looking for it. So there we go.
Always paying attention to
Aaron.
Not
in the dark. He's in the lightness retreat now.
All right. When we come back, Josh Allen bounced back with a win. Would love to ask you, do you think he's on the right track? Bills with a win over the Raiders. We'll look at that when we return here on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn. And you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio-exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hosts. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethosts.com/terms.